Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The first time I met New York Assemblyman Ron Kim in person was August of 2020, when my husband Sean, myself, and my sister-in-law Donna drove to Albany to try to push legislation for an independent bipartisan investigation into the state's nursing home deaths. He was one of only a few Democratic lawmakers that wanted answers about the nursing home tragedy that took the lives of thousands of our elderly loved ones. And for Ron, it was personal. His uncle died after contracting COVID in a Queens nursing home, and he was hearing about horrific conditions that were happening inside the state's facilities from his own constituents. Through tragedy, Ron and I became not only good friends, but advocates, speaking at many rallies, joint TV, and print interviews. And if it wasn't for Ron Kim, Andrew Cuomo would probably still be governor. But recently, there have been rumblings that the former disgraced leader is trying to run for office again. He doesn't realize that Ron and I are going to continue to remind Americans of the deadly decisions he and his administration made that helped endanger the lives of our loved ones. And when it comes to an investigation into the reckless executive order that brought in over 9,000 COVID-positive patients into nursing homes, many of us are still working behind the scenes to try to make that happen. Many of us are still working behind the scenes to try and make that investigation still happen. Last year, Governor Kathy Hochul had announced a comprehensive review of New York's COVID-19 response with a Virginia-based firm, but surprisingly, that has been delayed until next year. My friend Ron Kim agreed to come on the podcast again to give us his take on all of the stonewalling, his efforts to bring truth and accountability for families, and whether or not he will run again next year in the upcoming election. One thing is for certain, whatever happens in the future, Ron and I will always be friends, and we will always have each other's backs. So please welcome my friend and fellow advocate, Assemblyman Ron Kim, to the Janice Dean Podcast. Ron Kim, thank you so much for being on the podcast again.
Yeah, thank you for having me back on, Janice.
And happy Thanksgiving. I know that you are a big family man, and tell me about what your plans were.
You know, this year we decided to deep fry the turkey. it was very unsuccessful last year. I purchased a deep fryer, but I didn't get the right gasoline. You know, I forgot what they're called. But this year, you know, we were able to successfully get everything, and that's it. You know, this is it. This is a new tradition. We're going to be deep frying turkeys every year.
Listen, you know that my husband is a fireman, and they do deep fry their turkey, and there are still risks. So this is a big risk that you take when you get into this kind of cooking.
Oh, you know, we go to my in-laws. We have an outdoor space, and I've seen every Google, YouTube channel warning. So we're taking it very seriously.
Okay.
But I know who to call if I'm in trouble.
Okay, very good. Yes, we don't need the fire department over at the Kim household. Okay, so listen, you and I met over 3 years ago now, during COVID, during the nursing home deaths and the tragedy and the advocacy that we have both been, doing on behalf of our family members. You lost an uncle in a nursing home because he contracted COVID. You have been very active since then in your advocacy. And it's very disheartening because a couple of weeks ago, we just got word that there is a delay in the New York COVID probe, which we've been hoping for the last year. Governor Hochul announced the investigation, and we were waiting for it, seeing if there would be any information to go forward. And I don't know how long it's going to be delayed for. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, first of all, I want to backtrack a little bit. You know, this is not what we originally wanted and asked for. You know, we, the families, wanted an independent bipartisan commission filled with, you know, prosecutors, investigators who were bipartisan independent to deep dive with the full state subpoena power to go back and get to the bottom of this. That would have revealed a lot more. But instead, the current governor decided to outsource the Democratic accountability to a firm down in, I think, Virginia or something. And, you know, I was disappointed that it wasn't something that we wanted to, but, you know, I was willing to take it, right? Because no one else was doing anything beyond the comptroller's report and the Tish James's report a few years ago. But now that it's delayed, it's even more upsetting because not only did you not listen to the family's wishes, you outsourced it. And now it's not enough that you don't have a time frame when it will be finished. So I think for families like yourself, every turn you've been hitting a roadblock and every turn you've been saying no. You know, you got to be quiet, Janice. You know, you're talking crazy now. Like, why are you? They've been trying to reduce you every step of the way. And I am amazed that instead of folding, you keep going and you keep saying, I'm not going to give up. And I feel injured, morally hurt and injured, but I am not going to let this deter me from seeking justice. And I think more and more people are feeling this way and joining the fight. And that's why I feel hopeful we will get there. And I just hope that the report is thorough and independent.
What's it like in Albany? You know, tell me about things that you're fighting for. Obviously, I know you because you want accountability when it comes to what happened during COVID in nursing homes. But you are still advocating on behalf of long-term care facilities for our elderly.
Yeah, I think our long-term care facilities have been broken for a long time. And the reason why accountability is so critical is because our government doesn't move administratively if there isn't a moment to do so. And especially when it comes to caring for our older people and our vulnerable family members, we just don't want to solve those issues unless there is a full accountability of something that we did wrong, you know, and that will move our administrative government to do the right thing. And in lieu of that, the only time that we actually build solutions is when we go to war or when people want to get rich, you know, and for economic reasons. It's either the economy or military competition when we build administrative solutions. But I think with this moment calls for a third path, which is caring for our people, right? Like when we wake up and we pay all, you know, we save all that money and pay all those years of taxes to wake up and realize our system has let down my grandma, my father, my mom. Just how demoralized would you feel? Like you would lose so much trust in the system and government that you may not want to work hard anymore. And I think many Americans feel this, but some, the very few, I care them, the care warriors. You know, I think the Justice League, you know, we call them many different ways, like the Darbinis, yourself. There's a few, the Voices for Seniors that have used this social moral injury into empowering the families to speak up. And I think it's so critical. You are, I believe, the true patriots that are not giving up in our American system. You're saying, I'm going to hold the system accountable and I'm going to improve it to care for our most loved ones moving forward, because no family should go through what I went through.
Mm-hmm. And it's frustrating. You know, Peter Arbini and I, a fellow family member who lost his father from COVID, attributed from a nursing home in Brooklyn. We went to Washington, D.C. a couple of weeks ago to try to meet with the subcommittee members who are also trying to help us and get answers. It's to the point now where we're hoping they will subpoena Andrew Cuomo and Howard Zucker, the former health commissioner, because I feel like in Albany there is a roadblock. So we're hoping in D.C. they will do something. But it does get frustrating. You know, you feel like there's a glimmer of hope, and then weeks go by again and you don't hear anything. I mean, are you, you know, confident that we're going to hear something out of D.C.?
That's my last hope at this point. I think the subcommittee on COVID response is probably, you know, I also sat down with them for an interview a few weeks ago, thanks to your nudging. And I hope that they're taking this seriously. They've issued multiple letters to the current administration asking for every detail of how they instituted those unilateral policies going back to 2020. The current governor is not complying. I don't think she even has any documents to turn over, to be mm-hmm. honest, because they probably shredded everything. But I think they whatever she has, I think she should just give it to them. You know, why, there's no point of covering up or defending the former governor. I mean, the former governor is out there trashing Kathy Hochul every turn that he has.
Yes.
Why would she defend him mm-hmm. in any kind of way? I mean, I think she should be fully transparent, not to be vindictive, but to be honest and hold everyone accountable, especially the former governor and the former commissioner of health, Howard Zucker, who, you know, was at the forefront of all the decision making.
Mm-hmm. And now has a prominent role with the CDC.
It's incredible. I mean, it's incredible that, you know, he was able to elevate after overseeing some of the deadliest policies of New York State and the country, and if not the world, because we set the precedence of how to handle COVID.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you have fellow Democrats that are proud of you for, you know, continuing to go across the aisle and sit down with some Republicans in Washington, D.C. and talk about what happened during COVID? I feel like you're the—I don't even think of you as Republican or Democrat. I just think of you as a hero. I just think of you as someone who knows right from wrong. And it's not about lining your pocketbooks or who the most powerful person in the room is. You're doing this for the good of the people we lost and moving forward so that this doesn't happen again.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not— I'm not loved by any party at this point. I mean, the choices I made politically will not get me to the next level of politics. You know, I'm not cutting any deals to shut up about certain issues. And that's how you go to places in politics. That's how you get power. And that's how you continue to go up. Like, for example, if I just did what the former governor asked me to do and lie and cover up for his mistakes, I'd probably be in Congress by now, you know, that's how the party system works. You curry favors and you cover up each other's messes. And that is the political currency that's so rewarded. And I think, and I'm a politician, you know, I know how the game works. But at some point, when you're allowing older people to die and you know exactly why and you don't say anything, what is the even point of being in public service or in politics? Mm. How can you wake up and look at yourself in the mirror and say you're doing good things when you know the truth and you just don't have the courage to say it?
Yeah. And people come at you on social media saying you're a Trumper, you know, they don't know how to handle you.
Yeah, it's frustrating. And I think we will get to the truth. I think there's too many people who love this country too much, including yourself and your family, that won't give up, that will hold people accountable and nudge and usher in a new era that center around caring for people. This basic humanity. Like, mm-hmm. how could you just let old people to go into these facilities knowing that they're going to die? And that is just unacceptable.
Mm-hmm. And we've been watching the UK very closely because they have been under doing conducting their own inquiry into the politicians that made these same types of decisions.
Yeah, and they're in a much better position because that kind of accountability pushes administrative changes. Our you know, democratic capitalist government is so rigid. And like I said earlier, the only time it moves is during wartime, when we're in military competition, or we're building bridges to make money for, you know, communities, economic reasons. You know, when do we ever actually invest in elder care? When do we actually put in the money we need to build facilities that saves people? Because guess what? We knew that these facilities were in trouble going back to 2014, when the federal government warned New York that you can't handle a natural catastrophe in the hospital and nursing homes. Here's a whole lot of money to get ahead of this. And you know what they did with that money? They hired no-show job, patronage jobs in the executive office to people's wives and cousins who didn't squander all that money away. So we knew since 2014 we had a problem, and we didn't do anything about it. And that's why democratic accountability, doesn't matter what party you're aligned with, is so critical to building institutions that can actually step in, especially during emergencies, to take care of people.
Mm-hmm. Don't go anywhere. We'll have more of the Janice Dean podcast right after this.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, one of the issues that Peter and I discussed at our meeting with some of the subcommittee is the VIP COVID controversy. And if you haven't heard about it in New York, Governor Cuomo, we had access, or they had access, to COVID tests early on. I think New York really had the first, COVID test facility. And Cuomo, instead of giving it to nursing homes to test incoming patients, he was giving them out to his friends and his families and, you know, possibly other lawmakers around him, and currying favor that way. Do you think that that's something that could possibly grow in terms of, you know, a fire for the Democratic Party that had access to those VIP COVID tests? And it's not just he gave a COVID test and they, you know, put the swab up their nose. Early on, the state troopers would bring the test to these people's homes, like Chris Cuomo and Kenneth Cole, who was married to one of Cuomo's sisters. They would do the test, and then state troopers would take the test to upstate New York. So they were spending time and state resources to do these little favors for these high-powered lawmakers. Do you think that that's going to come back and bite them?
I think that and other things that they've done during COVID to serve their elite clients, I call them, it's clientelistic politics, right? Like, you're not serving the public, but you're serving the few clients that got you into power. And that's what happened during COVID, is also the reason why we haven't had accountability. Because if we expose the truth, a whole web of very powerful individuals and groups may come down with them. And it would be too big of a scandal. And I think there are powerful people in position that have decided to some extent, let's just side with stability for now, because if we go expose this, there will be no stability in New York. I think too many people will go down with them.
Wow.
And I just think, that's kind of how we function. I just put a couple of band-aids, look the other way. At least he's not in power. Let's just focus on the next couple of things to help people. Mm-hmm. And instead of, you know, seizing this moment to have a transformative moment of changing our system that can truly protect and care for people, we're choosing to just protect their individual reputations, so they don't want to lose our jobs.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that other governors who had similar March 25th orders to put COVID patients into nursing homes, did they follow Cuomo? Do you think they were all sort of following his lead?
I have no doubt that New York set the model for everything, especially because some of the language that we put, that Andrew Cuomo put in legislatively, like giving out a near blanket get out of jail free card for nursing homes and its top donors, that language was copied and pasted in multiple other states and was even brought down to D.C. and introduced as a bill, word for word and similar. So that shows me how powerful New York was and how powerful the governor, former governor, was in setting the model for other places to follow.
Yeah. And we won't find that out unless there is a fair bipartisan investigation, you know, into all of it. We need subpoena power. There's no question. We can't just have, you know, like you mentioned, this quote unquote probe from the Olson Group in Virginia. By the way, the state paid $4.3 million for this that we're still waiting for. I mean, we can't just, that's going to be a nothing report.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think just the reason why we punt everything, we outsource that kind of accountability, is because everything else has been outsourced. And that's just the sad truth of where we are as a state and as a nation. I don't know if you noticed, but there's only four state and county-run nursing homes in the state of New York left. I think all of them did much better than the for-profit facilities during COVID. But under Cuomo's administration, in 10 years, they sold off like a dozen county-run nursing homes. So what this means is that, like, everything we've done, everything is privatized, everything is outsourced, including hospitals and nursing homes. So if we disrupt something that's broken, that is the last stop for care at this point. There is no alternative solution because we no longer have the public administrative ability to step in and save people. And instead of being honest about this lack of ability, we don't want, because they think that, you know, if they're too honest about it, they may be punished politically. We're just lying, covering things up, and making it seem like what we're doing in these facilities is good enough. And that's kind of what we have now in terms of the care infrastructure, is that it's good enough for us approach, which is definitely not good enough for us New Yorkers.
Mm-hmm. And we're getting older. It's not like this is not going to be a path for all of us at some point. So we need to care about these things now.
Yeah, and it's going to be too late. It's going to be too late by the time. I understand when there's like a public safety or like a threat of terrorism, you know, right in our face. We don't ask questions about how much we spend to keep us safe, right? But by the time that we get old and then we feel unsafe in that hospital or nursing home, it's too late.
It's too late.
It is going to be too late. And, and we're going to be sitting there wondering, why didn't we just invest more to improve this hospital? Yeah. I'm sick of sitting here waiting for 6 hours for someone to come here and take care of my dad. That moment is too late. And what do? You just get demoralized and you give up.
Yes.
And that's what's happening to so many people.
Right. Well, listen, I have a couple of good years left in me and you do too. And we're going to continue to fight. Don't go anywhere. We'll have more of the Janice Dean podcast right after this. Melissa DeRosa had a book out a couple weeks ago. She was the top aide to Andrew Cuomo and decided to try to rewrite history on behalf of herself and the governor. Did you read the book?
I did not read the book, but I read a lot of reviews and her interviews that came out of it. Did you read the book?
I did not, but because of a certain lawsuit that my husband is part of, there were certainly documents. There were documents about the nursing home that she wrote about. I think she wrote nursing home in her book over 100 times. So she was clearly trying to, give excuses or write history of what had happened. But I found it interesting that she didn't talk about her father's role as a lobbyist with the hospital association. I thought that that was very, because you know, obviously we're in the weeds with all of this, and Cuomo, DeRosa, and her family all have these tentacles that go into nursing homes and also, you know, donations and Greater Hospital Association. So I did read the important parts of her book that might, you know, be important for the lawsuit going ahead. But I did watch some of her interviews, and I found that, like Cuomo, most of the media that she did was very friendly towards her. And they didn't dig into her role in the nursing homes. And the conversation that you were part of during COVID, when she admitted to you and other lawmakers that they were covering up the numbers.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is not about selling books, but it's about reputation washing and just trying to make a comeback, either for herself to be accepted back into the Democratic elite circles, or you know, or ushering in you know the former governor to and re-enter public service. I mean, this is not about selling books. No one's going to buy that book, but it's about, you know, going on these interviews. And rewriting history on the airwaves and normalizing some of the bad things that they did. And you're absolutely right. Like, the right thing for her to have done was recuse herself every step of the way, knowing the conflict of interest that lied with her family. But that's not what she did. I mean, she did the opposite. Like, she brought in these hospital lobbyists that her family had represented and made millions for. Hospital lobbyists that raised millions of dollars for the governor and her and the Democratic Party. I mean, this is so corrupt. But by going out there and normalizing it, you know, she's making it okay for other people to follow the same behavior, and that's why holding their actions accountable is so critical in making sure that we don't repeat these mistakes.
Mm-hmm. You think he's trying to make a comeback?
Oh, I absolutely think, you know, he's doing whatever he can to try to come back. And, you know, I wouldn't surprise if he runs for mayor of New York City. because, to be honest, like, you know, I think in the political climate, as much as I think he's not a credible executive, you know, he's trying to be that moderate, you know, middle of the ground, moderate conservative candidate. And I think New York City, there's a space for that because everyone is trying to run to the left of Eric Adams. But it's clear, you know, the former governor is aligned or a little bit to the right even to the current mayor. And I think there's an opening for someone with name recognition who can get a few groups of, you know, to back him up. And I bet he's thinking about it.
Wow. You know, you talk about Eric Adams. What are your thoughts on what's happening with his investigation? A couple of weeks ago, the FBI got involved, you know, seized his phone and his iPad. He's under a tremendous amount of scrutiny for perhaps some corruption on his level. What are you to make all of this?
Yeah, unfortunately, this is, you know, how it used to be in New York City, like the Tammany Hall days. And that's the kind of politics that the current mayor, you know, pushed in. There's, I think, three paths that we've seen in recent years to power in New York City. You're either a billionaire that spends a lot of money like Mike Bloomberg, or you pander to, you know, nonprofit contractors and the fake progressives like the mayor, previous mayor Bill de Blasio. And now we got this current mayor who went back to the machine politics of currying favors and the Tammany Hall days. And I just think, you know, none of these people, the way that they've done it, have built the institutions that we needed. Mm. And ironically, I think the closest person who filled those gaps was Mike Bloomberg, because when he cut programs, he spent his own money on the side to fill those gaps.
Wow.
But that's not a sustainable model either, right? We can't rely on one person to fix everything in the city. Like, we need institutional support. And I think, you know, we need like a, remember Robert Moses who built the highways and all the beaches? We need like a Robert Moses of care. You know, we need someone that can go beyond one term, a top administrator, just like how we build parks in Manhattan.
Yes.
We need to build a care czar that can spend the next 20 years to build out the 21st century institutions that can take care of people. And I think that's the only way we get out of this.
What about a Ron Kim for mayor?
Dennis, I'm not laughing.
I don't want to laugh. I'm dead serious.
Yeah. No, I am not doing this to, you know, maximize on a crisis. I want to use this crisis to build the infrastructure around care. And I just don't know if being the mayor will be able to do that. I mean, I wouldn't mind being like the top administrator, you know, for a few years in charge of building a care infrastructure, you know, but I just don't know if New York City is ready for someone who actually want to solve problems. I think we are just so accustomed to politicians serving a special interest group and building enough coalitions of special interest groups to get into power. So, you know, we'll see.
What's on the horizon for you? You've got an election year coming up, right?
I do. I think I've pissed off so many people every two years. They come at me, Janice, and it's always tough on my girls, you know, to see all these like negative things in my community every 2 years. But this is I grew up in Queens. This is my hometown, and all these people are just flying in from outside, you know, propped up by the people that I upset in the past. But I plan on winning and winning big, and focus on what to come next after that. I mean, honestly, this is my sixth or seventh term. This is my sixth term, going on seventh term. If I don't feel like there's a path to do the work and solve problems in Albany, I'm probably going to look at something else after this year, and I'm open to all options. We may have to build something on our own, Janice, me and you.
Well, stay tuned. Listen, I'm so grateful for you. We need more Ron Kims out there. You are very brave. Because you're not the political mold. I mean, is New York the city that you came to as a young man? I mean, it seems very depressing to me.
We're going through a rough patch. There's no doubt about it. But again, going back to what I said at the beginning of this interview, what gives me hope are the true patriots like yourself and the family who do not succumb to the moral injury of this moment, who have turned their traumas and pains into activism, into holding people accountable. And that's what makes this country great. Mm-hmm. You know, that around that activism, you're able to build a coalition of diverse, you know, groups that go beyond political alignments, you know, and we're resetting the game of what it means to be an American, right? Like, we care about people. We want to build better schools. We want to build better nursing homes. Like, those are beautiful things that we should aspire to. Now we just need political leadership to catch up to this moment of what you're doing. And I think we'll be on a much better path. And the next wave of immigrants that come here will be walking into a place where they know that this is a city that works properly.
Mm. Amen, my friend. And, you know, I have so much faith in you. And like I said, I don't even think about, you know, D or R. I just think of a good human that is representing the people and wants the best for everyone. And man, let's keep talking because I want to keep helping. God bless you. I know we're getting into the holiday season, but I hope that you and I can get together and say cheers. And I want your optimism to rub off on me in the new year, because I'm not giving up. There's no question. But sometimes I need that little, you know, Ron Kim cheer in the background.
Oh, I'm feeding off of you, Janice. I'm, you know, I have more mornings that I don't want to get up. I feel just completely, you know, just demoralized. But I think about you and our beanies, and that's what gets me going. Mm-hmm. So I thank you. You know, and I hope to see you soon, too, so we can celebrate the new year.
All right, buddy. It's going to happen.
All right.
And thank you again. To be continued. And just thanks for being a good human and a good patriot and, you know, someone who got in this business for the right reasons. And I'm so grateful that, you know, our paths align.
Thank you, Janice. Talk to you soon.
Thank you to all of my listeners. If you have someone you think should make the Dean's List, let me know at Janice Dean on Twitter or Janice Dean FNC on Instagram. Or you can rate this podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review to this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or at foxnewspodcast.com. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. In these ever-changing times, you can rely on Fox News for hourly updates for the very latest news and information on your time. Listen and download now at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.